Welcome to today's podcast. We're going to be reading the 24-hour little book. Let's go ahead and open it with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. AA is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope that we may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. Reading from the 24-hour book, it says, AA thought for the day. I don't believe that AA works because I read it in a book or because I hear people say so. I believe it because I see people getting sober and staying sober. An actual demonstration is what convinces me. When I see the change in people, I can't help believing that AA works. We can listen to talk about AA all day and still not believe it. But when we see it work, we have to believe it. Seeing is believing. Do I see AA work every day? Meditation for today. Try saying God bless her or him of anyone who is in disharmony with you. Also say it of those who are in trouble through their own fault. Say it willingly that showers of blessings may fall upon them. Let God do the blessing. Leave to God the necessary correction of disciplining. You should only desire blessings for them. Leave God's work to God. Occupy yourself with the tasks that He gives you to do. God's blessings will also break down all your own difficulties and build you up your successes. Prayer for the day. I pray that I may use God's goodness so that it will be a blessing to others. I pray that I may accept God's blessings so that I will have harmony, beauty, joy, and happiness. Amen. You have the daily reflections for today?
Reflections?
Yeah.
This 24 hours a day, I can get the reflections.
All right. Well.
But on the start of the day, let me see what we just read.
Yeah, just what we read. What
you get meditation. Out of it?
Yeah.
Yesterday, I was going to share this with you. Yesterday, I was very blessed. Someone helped me out with some gas money. So I'm pumping, and I paid with my card. And I'm over at the 7-Eleven, and it's been known to have some homeless congregants around there. Well, a guy approaches me and said, "Hey, man, you got a couple of bucks for some Jack in the Box?" And I said, "No, I really don't." And he goes, and he looked at how much I just paid. He goes, $50, huh? You guys are demons. I don't understand people. You have $50 for gas." And I'm thinking, first of all, he had this look on his face. Like, he's either, like that, the war movies they see, he's got that 1,000-yard gaze, looking over my shoulder, glassy-eyed.
Yeah.
So he's probably on something, too. Realize I'm not going to even get into it with him. And he was ranting and raving and kind of walking away. And all I could say was, "Well, God bless you." Really. I mean, no matter what I say, he's just going to carry that chip on his shoulder.
Yeah,
but who knows? Who knows? Maybe there's some positive force that those words have.
He probably checked himself, huh?
Maybe. I said it loud enough. No, I didn't say it loud, but I said, "Well, God bless you, boy." You know? I didn't say boy, but.
Isn't that amazing, huh? Entitlement right away in your own money, right?
You have no idea who and what I had to do to get that money. I had to ask the ex-wife. And I lied to her.
Oh, man, you got to make amends twice now, huh?
With her, yeah. I'm so used to making amends to her. But I have to make it sincere with her. I can't just give her lip service. "Oh, I've heard that before." Well, the last few times with making amends, they've been from the heart.
Well, you know, it's very difficult to get out of a situation. You don't have anywhere to go, man. It's like, wow, what am I going to do? You're waiting on God. "God, you're taking too long, God. Here, let me hustle."
Yeah. So, anyway, no one got hurt, and I got a full tank. And it did get me to two places I really needed to go to today that I was actually kind of stressing about. So I just kind of threw fate to the wind and said, maybe. I didn't tell her it's for gas money, though. So, would you like daily reflection?
Please.
All right. My name is Patrick, and I'm an alcoholic in recovery. Today is Thursday, April 25th, 2024. This is from AA's Daily Reflections, titled Entering a New Dimension. In the late stages of our drinking, the will to resist has fled. Yet when we admit complete defeat and when we become entirely ready to try AA principles, our obsession leaves us and we enter a new dimension, freedom under God as we understand him. And that's from the book, As Bill Sees It, page 283. I am fortunate to be among those who have had this awesome transformation in my life. When I entered into the doors of AA alone and desperate, I'd been beaten into willingness to believe anything I heard. One of the things I heard was, this could be your last hangover, or you can keep going round and round. The man who said this obviously was a whole lot better off than I. I like the idea of admitting defeat, and I have been free ever since. My heart heard what my mind never could. Being powerless over alcohol is no big deal. I'm free and I'm grateful. And that's today's daily reflection. Any comments, Fernando?
Yeah, just the fact is that being free and being grateful, the opportunity to turn it over, you know, and get something out of the problem, out of the situation. Yeah, something constructive, you know. Motivation. You know, it always reminds me of that movie, Gone to the Wind.
Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, when that lady picks up a old carrot and she's starving and she says, I'm never going to be hungry again. Remember?
Yeah.
Scarlett
O'Hara.
Yeah. So tell me about that scene. What do you remember? See, the point is that she went to extreme hunger and she became very successful at, you know, buying buildings and producing jobs and so forth. So I guess when that guy came back, she wanted to buy them, right? That's where he dumped her.
Hmm. Well, it just said in that passage that was just read, it says you have to be beaten into willingness.
Hmm.
You know, you have to hit bottom, I guess, or be against the wall. I know from experience. It's like, well, everything else failed. Might as well. I mean, it seems to work for those people over there, as nutty as they are in AA. And the coffee isn't bad either, so I'll come back again. But
that's the foundation. That's the foundation of friendships. Is AA hitting bottom and then rising back up? You know. I got to a point where I too couldn't go to the left, I couldn't go to the right, and I said, well, you know, I tried everything else. Has it come to this? You know, and it did, and it was a missing link. Why do we have to use all the credit cards, all the friends, exhaust ourselves physically, mentally, financially? Why do we have to test our
limits
almost to the point of death? So we say uncle, you know, so we say uncle. And then this character defect still trying to pull it back in there, you know.
Yeah. When you wrote about, you know, admitting, you know, and there's freedom in admitting it. Well, at first, when I was young, I'm not going to tell anyone I'm an alcoholic. Only at those meetings. It's cool. But, you know, now I don't advertise that I'm an alcoholic unless, of course, I'm wasted. Then, gee whiz, you can tell a mile away. But in normal conversation, unless the subject comes up and then if it's kind of focused on, then I'll add my 2 cents. I'll say, well, I have a little experience with that. You know, as a matter of fact, I am an alcoholic. So I kind of maybe can make some suggestions or have something to offer you. You know, but it is a sense of freedom. I don't have to hide the fact that I'm an alcoholic, even if I'm sober. It's like I said, I don't wear a t-shirt and I don't have it etched in my forehead, you know, like a scarlet letter.
There you go. Why don't you read a couple of paragraphs on this? You're closer to the mic there.
Oh, okay.
What's the title on
of the book?
No, just on the reading.
Okay. 1958. Constructive use of trouble. Interesting. One of our great industrial companies in this country has as its slogan, you've heard it often, progress is our greatest product. I think that this particular conference of ours bespeaks more promise and more progress for AA than any that have gone on before. It holds promise and has been filled with progress because it has had trouble, and it has converted that trouble into an asset, into some growth, and into great promise. I would like to dwell, in our last moments here, on this matter of trouble. AA was born out of trouble, one of the most serious kinds of trouble that can befall an individual. The trouble attendant upon this dark and fatal malady of alcoholism. It was true of Ebby and Dr. Bob and me, and it has since been true of every single one of us that you approached AA in trouble, in impossible trouble, in hopeless trouble, and that is why we came. And this trouble has been such destructive, impossible trouble that it has taken a virtual miracle of the grace of God to raise each of us out of our bondage. Then, as Harry Thibault has so well put it, the miracle stage is over, and then comes this question of facing life, of living and growing and working together, of carrying this message to the world, of becoming citizens of the world worthy of the name. That, then, is the problem. Great abundant grace is still with us if we will take hope, but no more do we find this outright grant of the miracle of sobriety. So now we have a different kind of trouble. We can still make a destructive trouble out of this if we wish. We can relapse into our former state. But happily, most of us don't do this. The trouble is now converted into an educational process. It is something for growth, and progress becomes our most important product. And trouble is the touchstone, the stimulus to the perfection of that progress. Let me illustrate with the inside story of the production of the AA book. I've touched upon it very lightly in AA Comes of Age, because it would have taken too many pages to explain just how grievous the troubles of production of this book were. During the production of that book, I saw human nature at its most sublime. I also saw it at its worst and most sordid. And I partook sometimes of this sordid end of the deal. I was raised down on Wall Street. I began to think in terms of how hungry I was. Here was the means not only of getting over being hungry. Here was the means of becoming famous. Here was the means of power. All of these thoughts would rise in me every once in a while, and once in a while I would make a move in that direction. It would be quickly sensed by other people who had the same defects and who spotted me like that. They settled down on me and the group conscience began to talk. I think God performed several miracles on me to give me the intelligence to see that they were right. We had quarrels about money. We had quarrels about prestige. We had the bitterest quarrels over the most magnificent passages in that book. And out of that conflict, out of that trouble, came an education, an application of divine principles that made the book what it is. If we hadn't had any trouble, we wouldn't have gotten any book. So it takes the absolute and the relative, the divine and even the sordid, to make this very important product, progress. Stop there. Yeah, AA was born out of trouble.
Right on.
I wonder if I was too, you know, if I was conceived, if my mom and dad were in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind.
Sorry. Yeah, I think sorry, we, mom, we were all, I kind of heard I was a mistake.
I never heard that. But my older brother used to joke, you know, you're adopted. That's
yeah,
kind of cruel.
It's like me and my brother were born in the same year. He said, you were born out of the leftovers, Fernando.
Oh, shit.
That's from Our Great Responsibility, a selection of Bill W.'s General Service Conference talks. And we're reading Tradition 7 today, and it had a paragraph that I read, should we accept money or shouldn't we accept money? And they, like you said, there was a lot of trouble because someone left $10,000, you know, for them. And they started talking about how there was other money set aside in people's wills, up to $500,000 already, that this, you know, those people have put AA on their wills and so forth. And they went to a, well, you know what, if we're going to get immensely rich, and everybody, now we're going to start squabbling over money and how to spend it, and then we're going to focus on other projects and so forth. And so they decided to stay poor there and accept no outside foundations, just so that we can focus on alcohol, you know, sobriety, helping the other person. And in all, I added that, I said that, you know, it's the best thing, because when we come in here, you know, we're only down on our luck a little bit. We still have our eyes, and we're still have our feet, and this is still America, and when then we can bargain with God and say, God, get me a car, and I'll go to the rehab and get four people and bring them over to the meeting, you know, and I'll use your car for meetings and for your thing. And I tell that guy, hey, you don't have anything, man. Bargain with God. Ask him. And he said, okay. They get a car a month or so later. They go out and they get the guys. And the second time they get, they only bring one. And the third time, they're gone into a different state. They got the girl. They got the pot. And the fact is that out of constructive measure, the greatest thing that came out of my life is being a member of Alcoholic Anonymous through times of trouble, right? That I thought it was trouble. But it was only but for the grace of God I was still being sustained in society, and, you know, I didn't get an eye poked out or something.
Yeah, really. Yeah, you know, like my little visit to the morgue, it's like,
tell us about your visit from the morgue. Tell us from the top. I remind you, you were so pissed off a few weeks before because you had to pay those $200.
No, I didn't pay that. I ended up paying less.
Less?
I had a doctor's note, a legitimate doctor's note.
Right, right.
So, oh, sorry. Didn't know.
But so, then you, what happened? Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I get in the parking lot and I get a phone call from that lady. Oh, okay, I got your doctor's note, and it's okay, just pay the $160 instead of the $240. I said, great, I'm out in your parking lot right now. Said, oh, really? Oh, okay, well, just be at the front door by 8. We go in, we sit down, you know, they take roll, you know, or you
this
sign in.
This is at the Los Angeles morgue.
L.A. County Medical Examiner Coroner's Office.
You were down there.
Down there.
You were
there. I was down in what they call the crypt, the tombs.
Wow.
But not at first. At first you go in, you got your name is on a printout, and you sign next to it. Of course, you fork over the cash.
Yeah.
Then while everyone's doing that, that takes a little time. They're showing a slideshow of some pretty horrible DUI accidents.
Wow.
And
like brains on the freeway?
Yeah, it gets graphic.
And decapitated heads?
No, well, supposedly, but it was so gory you couldn't really distinguish it. But it looked like that doesn't belong, you know, 2 feet away from the body, whatever that is. And you could just deduct that it was a head or something.
We can handle it. You can tell them.
So, anyway. And then they have the music in the background. And they have survivors, the victims, surviving family and friends, making personal statements and everything like that. The one thing they did not have was the person that did it did not make statements. I mean, they might show their mugshot, but that's it. No statements, no comments from them. They're convicted, and or the justice was dealt them. So anyway, then they say, okay, I am a forensic examiner. I'm the guy that shows up in the van. after we know it's a fatality. The LA County coroner's only handles bodies that are declared dead, unless there's special circumstances that we can't have access to, like going down a cliff. That's the fire department. Or the one where a guy, his body ended up on a freeway sign, you know, 30 feet above ground. LA Fire Department, again, they had to go up there with a ladder and get the body. So anyway, he's the guy, and he instructed us that if there is a questionable, if there's a fatality, even detectives are not allowed to touch the body at all. So if they need the identification, the coroner has to pull out the wallet or anything, you know, regarding that person, the survivor. Then he passes out masks, gloves, and foot coverings, and says, good, you all wore hoodies and something warm because it's a little chilly down there. So we go downstairs, take a left. First thing I see, there's a stainless steel cart, and there's a body on it, and the face is open. There's a lot of blood, and they explain this guy was in a drive-by, and he got his brains blown out, or he got shot in the head. It's very evident by the blood. So then we continue in, and we see row upon row upon row of slabs with wrapped in like dull colored plastic. Some of the bodies, most of them were all the way covered, but some of the faces you could see, and some of the body parts too. And by that time, I think everyone was over the shock value, until we take a few steps in the other direction, and they show the autopsy room. And there they are. The first thing I saw was a very large man being gutted like a fish. And they're just flapping over his abdomen. And you can hear it splat. And so it's very graphic. And anyway, then we continue on. I noticed a middle-aged man. He was stiff, and they had already had him open, and they were taking his internal organs out and putting a thermometer in it, and then they weigh it. And so this guy was all the way open. Right next to him was, I couldn't make out what this was. It looked like just a slab of meat being held open by two palms with ribs. And then they explained that this baby, it was a baby, 8 months old, was thrown out of a car during a murder-suicide. The mother went crazy, stabbed her boyfriend to death, grabbed the two kids, went down the 405 freeway, threw both kids out. One survived, the one obviously did not, that I saw. And then she went and drove her car through a telephone pole and a tree, and she died. So another thing the coroner explained is everyone that dies ends up here. They end up here. Your grandparents can end up here, even if they live way up in the hills and they have a lot of money. They end up here. Michael Jackson was here. Tom Petty was here. All these, you know, famous high-profile people. So we then go into another room where it's where they bring the body in that's still clothed. His job is to photograph the body front and back, clothed, strip it, and then clean it and photograph it again. And this particular guy said, I've been here 19 years now, but 21 years ago, I was a person that put somebody on one of these slabs. And I think about it every single day. I don't take it home with me, except the only thing I take home is when I'm surrounded by all these people that didn't know what was coming, you know, they never got a chance to say goodbye or I love you to their loved ones. Me, I get to go home at night and do that every single night. So to him, the job was, it was a matter of gratitude, number one, that, you know, he was able to turn a very severe wrong tragedy that he committed into a positive. So, went back upstairs for another slideshow, and this one was even more graphic. They showed a celebrity there, not a celebrity, but a celebrity's wife. It was basically O.J. Simpson's ex-wife. Mm-hmm. And I was all bloody and very graphic and all that. And then we pretty much wrapped it up and concluded it. And it had an effect on me. Even if I'm sitting here and I see cars going by, I said, you know, somebody, I guarantee if you sit at like an intersection for 10 minutes, depending on the time of day, You know somebody's driving under the influence. And they don't set out to get in their car, get drunk, and then get in the car and hurt somebody. It's just the alcohol just really messes with their sense of judgment and rationale, rational thinking. So, it's like think before you act. But when you're on alcohol, you don't think. I don't think. You know, it's more impulsive. Well, I could drive. I could do this. But it's a very profound experience. I don't know of any other way to get into that program. It's a 4-hour program. Unless you get a DUI or a youthful offender or a repeat offender. I'm a repeat offender.
What advice you have for repeat offenders that they can try to wake themselves up before? I just saw a girl that was going to graduate for 4 weeks, and after she hit two pedestrians and killed them, she was 2.4, smiling and joking, and in the hospital, they're checking it out, and she goes, "Hey, you ever go to Las Vegas? We're going to be going to Las Vegas." "Yeah, my parents, I'm going to spend $500 and stuff." And when she mentioned that, I can see that the parents are part of the problem here. You know, they got a 7-year-old little girl with a car and alcohol, and she was Mexican. She got 14 years out of it, and she kept telling the officer, "Well, you said Monday. How about Tuesday? Can I go to school on Tuesday?" You know, just kept trying to. She wouldn't accept the fact that she ran over two people.
Really?
It wouldn't just click.
She was still drunk.
Yeah. But what would you say to, how can we reach a repeat offender that they don't have to go all the way down to the bottom? They know they have a problem, but they can't do anything about it. I knew I had a problem, but I couldn't stop drinking.
I would just get real simple. I say, do you enjoy waking up in a nice, clean, warm bed? Do you enjoy making your own breakfast, or better yet, having a wife or girlfriend make it for you and sitting down and enjoying it? Do you enjoy walking your dog? Do you enjoy simple things like cutting your grass or going to your kid's ball game? Well, if you do, think about that, because that's something you won't see for a long time, if ever, if you get in your car, you know, really inebriated or shit-faced or whatever you want to call it. And especially if you're a blackout drinker like me. I would just say, think about the things that you hold dear, that you value the most. Forget about your job. Mm-hmm. All that shit's secondary. Forget about your finances. You know, unless you have someone to send you money on the books when you're in prison.
All right.
Or if they don't spend it for you while you're in prison. Or file for a divorce while you're in prison, and you're powerless over that. You are powerless over so much when you're locked up. And I'm not a convict, I'm not a felon or anything like that, but I have done, as they say, wino time. You know.
Wino time.
Yeah, wino time.
I don't think there's a solution. I don't think the alcoholic guy's gonna take it down to the dregs. You know, we have our intelligent they stopped in time, that they didn't have to lose all that. We have those people that are intelligent, they wake up, you know, and maybe they have binges problems, but they'll stop to realize and look back, and there's enough time to say no, you know, to make a change and make a commitment to the man inside of you, and start going to meetings where it effectively starts working for you.
Sorry about that.
Yes. So thank God, you know, that we're standing on the grace of God, and it's really God's grace that sustains us, keeps from being killed or killing ourselves or killing somebody. And then that grace starts to grow when we go to AA or 12-step program. We're able to focus more on that grace, and the grace gives us power to go to work. Grace gives us power to be grateful. The grace gives us power to reevaluate ourselves and realize that it's the amount of grace that picks us back up. We lost belief. When we lose belief, we lose love for self, respect for self. So one thing about AA, they can put back hope, belief, trust, faith, and we use it for good. You can use those for bad. I used up all my belief. I believe I can get that bottle, put in my pants, and walk out of there. I have hope that I'll have a get a case for the next day. I hope if I roll this guy, you know, this is the way he's going to come out. That's cashing in your hope and your faith, you know, for the evil side.
It's funny you mention that, because when I used to help myself, I'd grab a case of Corona and, I don't know, a half gallon of Captain Morgan's, throw my Jag in the cart, and it just so happened to be I'd been going to that store for years. They knew me as a clean-cut, upright, pillar of the community type. Say, hey, see you, Pat. But on the way out, I'm like, oh, God, please, you know I need this because I am so sick. I mean, I was serious. Please, God, just I need this, and you know I need this. Somehow, he spared me, you know, a trip to jail because of that. I got what I needed, just like it says on page 552. I really was in need, not want at that point. It was more medicinal, maintenance. And I said, oh, thanks, God. And now I got to go and share with those guys. Forget it. All of a sudden, I became selfish. This is my stash. Keep your hands up.
I mean, you pay a big price in getting it, right? You had to pray. You had to believe. You had to use your faith and your hope to get it out of there.
Are you kidding? The hardest part was getting up on 2 feet and putting one foot in front of the other. I was so weak. Thank God for shopping carts.
Wow.
Well, mine was a combination shopping cart, walker, and RV, because all of my worldly stuff was in there. My survival gear and all that. But back to the DUI, they should make that mandatory for high school students who are about to get, like if you take a driver's ed class, make it mandatory. Give them a tour of that morgue. You know? And another step further, it might sound a little harsh, have the DMV make you go on a tour, you know, before they issue you your first license as a teenager. You know, go see what you can potentially do if you want to mess around, because of course, statistically, I believe the highest fatality rates for motor vehicle deaths is 18 to something year olds. Young kids, they want to hit the gas pedal and hit the bottle. They don't know, you know, what they can do. They just want to go faster.
Thank you everyone for coming out here today. We're shooting the breeze, and boy, how time flies, huh? 48 minutes. You got anything else to say?
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, and I appreciate another day of being sober.
Amen. Let's go ahead and close out with this serenity prayer, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Keep coming back.